Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Good evening. Welcome to The Tattered Cover. Thank you for supporting your independent bookstore. The Tattered Cover is delighted to welcome New York Times bestselling author Brad Meltzer back to our store. His new book is a bit different from his usual fare. 8 years ago, on the night he became a father, he asked himself the question for the first time, what kind of man did he want his son to be? The answer, heroes for my son. Please join me in giving a warm welcome to Brad Meltzer.
Thank you. I appreciate it. So as you heard, this is a book about heroes, and it is for my son. And so I have to start by embarrassing my own family. And I'll tell you, because this is a personal book for me, as you know, that my father recently had open heart surgery, major surgery. My dad's had hip replacement surgery and other things. You know, that was fine. This is open heart surgery. When you have open heart surgery, you know, it's like they saw you open and they rip open your rib cage and they take your heart out of your chest. It is beating in the air as they hold it. Actually, I'm totally making that part up. I'm a writer, not a doctor. But you know what I'm saying, you know, right? They got the heart up in the air and it's a big deal. And when you go for open heart surgery, one thing to know is you don't just go for it. You got to interview the doctors. You don't just like pick the first one and say, hey, have at it. So we go out and I go with my dad and he's interviewing all these different doctors. And we go to the first guy and the first guy has these meticulous hands that are gigantic. And he has this beautiful office and he says, I don't even crack the whole rib cage. I do a small incision right here. And I go in. It's this way that nobody does and still being taught. I've trained people all across the country. I've done it 500 times. I've never lost anyone on the table. I'm the leading expert in the country on it. And this guy has got the confidence and the skill. You know this man has got it together. And then we go to the second doctor. We've got to get the second opinion. And that guy, as we walk into his office, you know, he says, oh, Meltzer. And he looks at the name and he says, oh, you're Brad Meltzer. I read your books. I like your books. I say, oh, thank you very much. And he proceeds to explain that he does it the old-fashioned way. And he rips you open and pulls it out. And he says, you know, it's going to be a long recovery. It's going to be hard. And yeah, lots of people, it's tough on them. And, you know, and you could die. And this could be the end. And this is going to be a hard one on you. And I'm sitting there, and I know who we're supposed to choose, but my dad looks at this guy, and he says, I think we found our guy. I said, Dad, what are you talking about? Did you hear what he said? It's going to rip you open. It's going to be much harder recovery. It's going to be really tough on you. He's lost people on the table. Why would you pick this guy? And he says, because he buys the books. And I said to him, are you kidding me? But then I said, does he buy hardback or paperback? And we actually, I will tell you, this is true. I did not make it up. There's a true story. I actually did convince my father to go with the first guy because I did find out that the second doctor does buy just paperback. So, but my dad is fine now and he's doing okay. And I tell you about him because I think to know about him is to learn about where this book came from. You see, on the day that I was born, my dad went to the liquor store. And I think probably many dads go to the liquor store for a variety of reasons. But my dad went, he bought a bottle of champagne on the day I was born. And he said, I'm saving this bottle and I'm not going to open it until my son's wedding day. And my dad's not a planner. He doesn't plan for anything, but he planned for that. And when I was older, my dad lost his job. We moved from Brooklyn, New York to Miami, Florida. And when you pack up the moving van, you know, that's full of your stuff. That's your stuff. But what you keep in the car with you, and you drive yourself, the stuff you don't want the movers to touch, what you keep in the car is your life, right? What nobody can have but you. This is the most important stuff in your life. What are you going to put in the car versus put in the van? And I remember when we moved down from Brooklyn to Florida, it was my mom and my dad, my sister and myself, and behind the headrests, There were two bottles of champagne that rolled back and forth the entire ride in the sun. My parents knew nothing about taking care of champagne, as you can tell, but this was their life. We were their lives. And they knew, if they had nothing else, that they were going to keep these two stupid bottles of champagne until we got married. And sure enough, on the day that I got married, my dad, we cracked open at the wedding this bottle of champagne that he'd saved for over two decades. And it was foul and sour and bitter. It was, he knew, again, nothing about taking care of champagne. But I will tell you, this was the greatest glass of champagne I'd ever had because my dad had waited over two decades to share it. And I love that. And I didn't even really think of that story until I started thinking about where this story came from. And as you heard, 8 years ago, on the night my son was born, I said, I'm going to write a book for him. A book that's going to last his entire life. And the day that I presented this book and gave it to him when I was saving for it, and I was going to give it to him when he was an adult, but the day that I gave it to him, the sky was going to open up, the clouds would part, rainbows would rain down in every direction. And he would think I was such an amazing dad. This moment was going to be so perfect that Norman Rockwell was going to come from the grave as a zombie, be handed pen and paper, and paint the moment because it was going to be that perfect. And sure enough, I went home that very first night my son was born 8 years ago. And I started writing down rules for him to live by. And I wrote down, be nice to the fat kid in class. And I figured I'd add to this, and over time I'd have this wonderful presentation I could give to him, this book. But the truth was, I was a father who knew nothing about fatherhood. And I didn't know what the book was going to be. It was just a kind of big schmaltzy mess. It was like telling someone to be good and expecting them to be good as if that should have an impact just because you say so. And sure enough, I didn't know what I was doing until someone told me this story about the Wright brothers. Is that every time the Wright brothers would go out to fly their plane, they would bring enough materials for multiple crashes. That means every time they went out, they knew they were going to fail. And they would crash and rebuild and crash and rebuild, and that's why they took off. And I love that story. I love that story. I want my son to hear that story. I want my daughter to hear that story. I want them to know that if they have a dream and they work hard and they have a good side order of stubbornness, that they can do anything in this world. And I realized in that moment, this is the book I want to write. I don't want to give him just words. I don't want to give him just advice. I want to give him proof, absolute proof that anything is possible. I would collect these heroes for him and show him these amazing stories. And when I thought about it in my own life, I started thinking, where did I learn kindness? Who taught me to be a nice person? Who taught me that I should be generous, or at least try to teach me those things? And beyond my own parents, the first person that came to mind was the first hero in my life, my grandfather. His name is Ben Rubin. Ben Rubin, when I was little, used to tell me stories about Batman, because he knew I loved Batman stories. And the story he told me one story that always went like this. He'd say, Batman and Robin are in the Batmobile on the edge of a cliff. And in front of them is a white van. And inside the white van is the Joker, the Penguin, the Riddler, and Catwoman. And then they catch him. And I would say, tell it again. And he'd say, Batman and Robin are in the Batmobile, right? Same story. 5,000 times he told me this story for no other reason. It barely had 30 words in it, but he told me over and over for no other reason than he knew that I loved hearing it. And anyone who's selfless with their time and that generous and is doing something for someone else, that's a hero to me. You tell me my first Batman story, you get in the book, right? Anybody in this room tells me my first Batman story, you're in the book. And so now I had two heroes. I had the Wright brothers, and I have my grandfather, Benjamin, who's named, when I named Ben Addison in my very first novel, was named after him. So I had two heroes. And then I started looking through other people that, when I was growing up and through my life, that I just admired. Mr. Rogers, Rosa Parks, Jim Henson. I love Jim Henson. You know what? You invent Kermit the Frog, you're in the book. But the truth was, I didn't just want famous people who did cool things. Inventing Kermit the Frog is great, but what about Jim Henson? What's the moment we can actually relate to? If I tell you he invented Kermit the Frog, it tells you he's popular, he's smart, but what does it tell me about the man? And then I heard this story. I couldn't find one for so long, and then this story, one of his kids told this story, is that when Jim Henson was 17 years old, he wanted to work in television and went to a news station and said, I want a job. And they said to him, we have no jobs. And as he was leaving the building, dejected, he found a sign on the wall that said, "We are looking for puppeteers." So he goes to the library, takes out a book on puppeteering, comes back to the same exact place and says, "I'm a puppeteer. Can I have a job?" They gave Jim Henson 5 minutes. That is all he needed. And that's the story I can understand. I want my son, I want my daughter to learn that if someone puts a roadblock in front of you, you go around it. And I can say those words to them, but again, I wanted to give them the proof that it's possible. And so then I went from there and started building and building and building, finding stories, not just about great people, but about the singular moment that makes them so great. And Thomas Jefferson is a perfect example, who's in the book, is not in this book because he wrote the Declaration of Independence. He's in it because he never took credit for writing it while he was alive. I mean, if I wrote the Declaration of Independence, I would have a tattoo on my forehead that said, "I wrote the Declaration of Independence." This guy runs for the presidency and never says, "You know that document, you know, arguably the greatest decree of Western civilization and government? Yeah, that was me, TJ." He called himself TJ. That's actually historically accurate. I totally made that part up, right? I write fiction, so I made parts up. I made up that part. I went from fiction to nonfiction. I went so fast, you guys didn't even see it. It was so super fast. But I appreciate you smiling at the joke. But, I mean, that was amazing to me. And I want my son to learn that kind of humility. And I can say be humble, but, you know, show me what someone gives up. Show me what they pass on. Show me all the credit they can have that they take none of. And I'll show you the man. And I wanted that to be true throughout this book. And we found great people, from Eleanor Roosevelt, as I said, from Rosa Parks, to Lucille Ball, to find stories about her. Find these singular moments with each of them. But it wasn't just for me about famous people. And I tell my son all the time, you know what being famous means? Nothing. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't make you any better of a person or any smarter. And, you know, it's like when we talk about athletes or someone like Tiger Woods, and forget about the scandal, but I always, you know, I've said to him for so long, I said, "Tiger Woods is not a hero. He's good at sports." You know what that means? Nothing. It means you're good at sports. Look at me. Do I look like being good at sports like I care about that? I don't. And not because I don't care about sports. It's just that all it does is mean you're successful. It's like saying, what does it mean if you sell a lot of books? You know what that means to me? Nothing. It just means you're good at selling books. It doesn't mean you're great at anything beyond that. But what did you do to help someone else? What did you do with your time to inspire someone else? That, to me, is what a hero is. And so I kept looking. And I didn't want it to just be about fame. It had to be about more than fame. So, yes, 80% of the people in the book you've heard of. You've heard of Jackie Robinson. You've heard of Lou Gehrig. You've heard of the people who are in the book. But there are people like Frank Shankwitz, who's a police officer. And Frank Shankwitz, as a police officer, hears about a boy who has leukemia, who also wants to be a police officer. So Shankwitz gets a little police uniform made for the boy. He gets little motorcycle wings made. He has a little motorcycle riding course made, and the boy can go on the course and has this amazing day. And the boy goes into a coma. And Shankwitz goes to the boy's hospital room. And as he pins the wings onto the boy, I mean, you can't make this stuff up. The boy wakes up out of his coma and smiles. The boy eventually goes back into his coma, eventually dies, and on the flight back from the funeral, Frank Shankwitz looks at his buddy and says, "You know, we made that kid really happy for one day. We should do that for other kids." And that's how the Make-A-Wish Foundation is born. And I love that story too. I want my son to hear that one. I want my daughter to hear that one. I want him to know what you can do with a good idea that you share with someone else. I want him to know that just two people, without fame or fortune or anything else, can change the world. It is one of my core beliefs. You know, I don't think there's an ordinary person in this world. There is no such thing as an ordinary person. But I believe that those ordinary people, all of us, change the world. And I want him to hear those stories. So I will tell you, and I always prefer the Q&A than just talking about the book, so we'll get to questions, but I should tell you my son's reaction when I finally did give him the book, because that happened a couple weeks ago. And this was the moment, right? I waited 8 years for this moment. I said, you know, almost a decade waiting to present the book. It's called Heroes for My Son, and I'm giving it to my son. And this is the moment when the clouds part and the rainbows are ready to come down. And I'm so excited about this moment. I tell my son, don't take your shoes off when we get into bed tonight, because we may have to go out and change the world tonight. You may be that inspired by this whole thing. And so, you know, I give him the book. I wait till my other kids are sleeping. I give him the book. And now he has the book. And now he's curled in my arms. And this is the moment, right? My son is now reading my words to me. I'm like, yes, read slower. Read my own wisdom back to me. This is the moment. It's narcissist heaven. It's perfect. Yes, tell me more of my own genius. And my son doesn't care about Eleanor Roosevelt. And he doesn't care about Rosa Parks. He doesn't care about Lucille Ball. He wants the athletes. My son loves sports. So he's flipping through the book, and he sees the picture of Roberto Clemente. And he stops on Roberto Clemente. Roberto Clemente's in the book, not because he's a baseball player, not because he won 4 gold gloves. I knew nothing about that. I kept calling them golden gloves until the editor kept correcting them. I didn't know what that meant. But I knew that Roberto Clemente had heard about an earthquake in Nicaragua. And he could have written a check and, like everyone else, you know, got his name in the paper. Instead, he sends 3 plane loads of food to the earthquake victims in Nicaragua. All 3 plane loads get confiscated, stolen. All the food is gone. All the medicine's gone. And he says, I'm so determined that the 4th plane's food and medicine get there. I'm going to get on the plane myself and make sure it lands and it gets to its intended destination. And he gets on the plane, and the plane crashes in the ocean, killing everyone on board, including Roberto Clemente. And as it says in the book, he's not a hero because he died. He's a hero because of why he got on board. And so my son is now reading this, and I'm waiting for him to tell me the inspiration that is now flowing through him. And I feel him shrinking in my arms. I can feel the air leaving his lungs. He's getting smaller. And he looks up at me and he says, Dad, this is sad. And now I've realized I've broken my son's heart for the first time. This is a disaster, right? This book is a horror. It's horrible. I mean, it's backfired in my face. I'm like, this is it. And so I put the book aside. I'm like, maybe I miscalculated. This is bad. The next night, my son comes racing into his room. He grabs the book from where I've put it. He excitedly jumps up on his bed and he says, so who are we reading tonight? And I said, well, what about Roberto Clemente? What happened? And he says, I like him. And I said, well, why do you like him? And he says, eventually to me, he says, because he gave his life to help those people. And I realized in that moment that you can't teach about a hero without teaching why you need the hero. You can't teach the high without showing them the low. It's what gives them all the perspective. And I love the idea that this story about Roberto Clemente's selflessness is somehow screwed into my son's chest. And I think, like every other moment I've had in fatherhood, the best moments of all are the moments that are complete and utter accident that I can't possibly plan for. And this was the book doing exactly what I wanted in a way that I never, ever anticipated, but thrilled me to no end. And that's what Heroes for My Son was entirely designed to do, is to be shared. And I will tell you that the most important pages in this book are not the ones I've written. They are the last 2 pages in this book, which are blank. And they say, your hero's photo here and your hero's story here. And I promise you, if you give this to your mom or your dad, when you present it to your grandmother, your grandfather, the teacher in your life who was the first one who gave you a shot, and you put their picture in this book and you write 1 sentence about them and you give it to them and you say, you're my hero, thank you. I promise you, that will be the most beautiful page in this book. And that's exactly what the book is there to celebrate, those people. With that said, I do want to end with 1 reading of 1 hero. And it's the hero that probably means the most to me in this whole book. It is my mom, Terry Meltzer. And this is her entry in the book. My mom, as I mentioned, died 2 years ago from breast cancer. She's the reason, I was writing this book now for 8 years, but she's the reason why I actually decided to publish it. And it was something that I, like the bottle of champagne, I think I was going to just save forever. But when I lost her, I realized, you know what, don't save the eulogy for the funeral. Sometimes it's better to do a little earlier. So, thanks to my mom, this book exists. And I should tell you 1 other thing before I do this, because this is in my mom's honor, is this book, Heroes for My Son, was rejected by my own publisher because they were like, how, you know, this is different from, and we do the thrillers and we don't know how to do a small book like this. So, you know, just because you love your son doesn't mean it's going to be a good book or anyone's going to care. And it's a departure. It's a total risk. You know, they're like, you know, I can go and sell more and do more and make everyone happier if I do the same thing over and over again. But I said, I want to do this book. and we've got a new publisher for it. The publisher actually was shut down. The imprint was shut down a couple weeks ago because the head of the publishing company left. And this became what's called in the industry an orphan book, which means it has no dad, has no mom. No one's looking out for it because that publisher left. It's a disaster. So this thing is supposed to crater. And then, you know what the advertising budget is for Heroes for My Son from the publishing? I'm going to tell you the full advertising budget. Guess the number. Zero. $0. The only ad that was placed for this book is a buddy of mine who runs a website in England said, "Hey, Brad, I got a website here. You want to send me a banner ad? I'll put it up there." So we put a banner ad. One banner ad that cost nothing and a $0 advertising budget. And I still said, I don't care. I love this book. I love my son. I love these people. I love what they stand for. I love Abraham Lincoln, and I love Amelia Earhart, and I love Albert Einstein, and I want to share these people. I want to share these amazing stories, these stories that people have not heard about, these amazing people. And we just found out, I'm announcing here a little hours ago before I got here, that Heroes for My Son will debut in the number 2 spot on the New York Times bestseller list. And I tell you that, no, I appreciate it, but I tell you that not because I want the gratuitous applause of, oh, Brad, you're great. I tell you that as my to say the most important thing of all, and I say thank you. Every signing that I've done for this book has been smaller than the signings that I do for the thrillers. But it has been with the group of people who I realize have been supportive of me since page one in the comics, in the novels, and in every other way and thing we've tried to do, whatever it's been. And I hope you know how much I appreciate that. The only reason this book worked, it wasn't because of the advertising, believe me. It was only because people like you came out and kept supporting it and saying, you know what, I believe in this too. And so for those of you who are buying, whether it's baby gifts or buying for your dads or just buying for your own kids, thank you. Thank you for doing that. Thank you for coming out here tonight. I know there are great things to do on a beautiful day in a city as beautiful as this. And I appreciate you joining and being here with us. So with that said, in my mom's honor, the little book that could, this is the story of Terry Meltzer. It was the worst day of my professional life. My publisher was shutting down, and we had no idea if another publisher would take over my contract. This was terrifying to me. I was racked with fear, feeling like I was watching my career deteriorate. But as I shared my fears with my mother, her reaction was instantaneous. "I'd love you if you were a garbage man," she said. It wasn't anything she practiced. It was just her honest feelings at that moment. To this day, every day that I sit down to write, I say those words to myself. "I'd love you if you were a garbage man," soaking in the purity and selflessness of that love from my mother. Her name was Terry Meltzer, and Theo, she's the woman you're named after. And that's the story of Terry Meltzer. So thank you again for coming tonight and for supporting us in all the different dreams that we've been lucky enough to dream. Happy to sign whatever books you want or small children you've brought or anything else. And again, have a wonderful night.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fode, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.